Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Lockdown Toronto. And today we discuss something of a lighter issue than some of the casts in the past, and that is the issue of cities. What are cities going to look like a year from now? What are they going to look like 2 years from now? How should we take this opportunity right now to address cities for the current pandemic situation and a post-pandemic situation? And because of that, we're going to be discussing cycling infrastructure. It's a topic that is near and dear to my heart. I'm a cyclist. I'm also a driver, so I get both sides of that issue. But right now, we're seeing ideas about the city be redesigned, reconsidered. Last week, a coalition of groups came together in support of 100 new kilometers of cycling infrastructure in this city. And today to speak to that is Janet Joy Wilson, who's a signatory to that coalition's letter and a representative of that coalition's ideas. Janet, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Rob. It's great to have the opportunity to talk about it. Because last week, within a matter of 72 hours, there was a group of about 10 of us who decided that we'd waited too long. We've all been sequestered since March and isolating and quarantining and seeing during that time cities around the world opening up their streets to people to physical distance from each other. And as I'm sure you're well aware, downtown Toronto, where we have the most dense population, the sidewalks have been too narrow for decades. And the lack of cycling infrastructure, safe, connected, protected infrastructure that is viable for all ages and abilities is not there. And so with the need for physical distancing, for the lack of awareness of how long this is going to go on, and seeing all the examples from Montreal's health corridors being released and like thousands of kilometers being installed now and throughout the summer. And then on the West Coast, a room to move. And so there's so many examples. Nobody has to make anything up. There's examples already within Canada, let alone Paris, Berlin, Milan, et cetera.
So rolling back the reel just a little bit. I love the energy. I love going down every subject. It's like I'm not even going to have to ask a question here. But rolling it back just a tad, what was before this crisis hit? What was the state of cycling infrastructure in the city, and what were the plans? Let's say, roll it back to last October, maybe. What were the cycling infrastructure on a rating of 1 to 10 in terms of global cities? Were we doing a good job? Were we doing a crappy job? And what were the plans in place then to make us better?
All right. So I can give you actually a real rating, because just last year I cycled in Stockholm, Copenhagen, Berlin, Montreal, New York, Chicago, Seattle, Vancouver, all within the last 6 months, I guess, or 12 months, let's say, in total. So we suck. We are zero.
Tell us how you really feel.
You know, when you see so many great examples of how easy it is, not only within a city, but to connect all the different forms of transportation. So I remember cycling in Denmark, and not just in Copenhagen, but throughout the countryside of Denmark, alongside railroad tracks. And then there'd be an easy, clear wayfinding sign to where you would park your bike if you want to leave it, or to take it easily onto the train to go downtown, and then to cycle off on protected, connected pathways. And it just seems so easy and intuitive. And here, you know, we don't have any connections. I have, since I started, well, I taught my son how to ride his bike 20 years ago. He's now 24. And I remember clearly riding with him on a street. And then there was a sign and it said, bike lane ends here. And this mother, I was so angry because I thought, what am I supposed to do? what am I supposed to do with my child who's trusting me, who I am trusting the city that this is a bike lane, even though it's not protected. There was paint, which is not infrastructure. But what am I supposed to do now? And there are so many signs throughout our city of bike lane ends here. We don't have that with car, like roads for cars. Those continue to go.
Right.
But we in the most vulnerable people who want to ride our bicycles to work, to
safely.
School, safely to all, like to our, you know, because I used to commute downtown 32 kilometers round trip. I loved it. I would arrive at the office jazzed. I had so many ideas. And at the end of the day, I'd cycle off my stress. And, you know, that's when I started advocating for safe streets, because I had firsthand those feelings, and let alone my health increase. And then you start seeing all the statistics and the data of I have, you know, better health conditions because of cycling.
Right.
But you know, I don't understand why we have had to beg. And this goes back decades to the 1970s when there were people, you know, with studies done on whether it was Bloor Street, Danforth, Young, wherever in the city. And there was some agreement to move things forward, and then it would get stopped. And as you know, Rob, with a new mayor, a new councillor, things get going, and then the brakes are put on. And
do you think, things get going. Tapping into that a little bit in terms of like the historical context, I mean, I'm aware enough to recall the Rob Ford years where he elevated this idea of war on the car, where the streets have largely been the domain of vehicles, motorized vehicles, forever, essentially since the beginning of our infrastructure, as opposed to a Europe or anywhere in Europe, have been designed from the start to accommodate vehicles primarily. So the idea of them being used for anything else is one that has it seems counter to how they were designed and encouraged to be designed. So it's almost like any cycling infrastructure would be shoehorned or band-aided on top of this value that we have for the streets primarily being for motorized vehicles. So do you think that legacy, that inertia of, you know, vehicles are the primary owners of the road. Do you think that inertia is going to stay, or is it partially to blame for the lack of action? Or do you think people are starting to rethink the way our streets can be used?
There's a lot in there. There's so many things to comment on, because it's interesting. It was in the States that roads were actually paved based on, or because of people who rode bicycles who advocated for smooth roads. You know?
Really?
So our road structure that we have today is, thank you, cycling advocates.
As opposed to what, cobblestone or?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, because of course, you know, a bone shaker, you know, that's what the bikes, the old bikes used to be called, because you actually, like, your bones got shaken up as you were on these cobblestone or dirt roads. And they advocated for smooth roads. So in Toronto, because that's where we are, our roads have absolutely been designed to move vehicles as fast as possible. Something that is straight and is wide. And our roads, a lot of our roads are very wide.
Right.
Our Department of Transportation is all about, has always been about how to keep the traffic moving. God forbid we have a traffic jam. Well, the person in that vehicle is part of making the traffic jam. You know, and so when you have a focus in a city so long of moving traffic forward, and people who are walking, who are going at their own steam, who have to press a button to beg to cross either 2, 4, 6 lanes of traffic, that shows the inequality right there.
Right.
And yet, with what has happened now, once the lockdown happened in March, the city became quiet, and we saw how much space we had given two vehicles now.
Right.
And there's so many SUVs and oversized, humongous trucks on our roads that have killed so many people.
Yeah. And that was part of my question. Now that the lockdown is in place and we've seen the roads be freed up almost, they're starting up again. I can even see outside on this main street here on Bathurst here, there's constant traffic, and it's completely different than it was even a week ago, as people are starting to commute a little bit more, feeling freer. But we saw the roads free up, and which basically maybe was the impetus for people to start rethinking how our roads were should be used. And today, in this past weekend, we saw some of the roads being opened up for pedestrian-only use, even some of the highways, I believe. Is this all part of that energy? And where did it come from? Is it a ground-up thing, or is it something that the city's been pressured to do, or is it something the city's taken an initiative on? And if you could speak a little bit about that.
Well, you know, I think the cleaner and greener future is what we have seen. Mm-hmm. You know, out in the beaches, there's this fox family who's living under the boardwalk.
We're being rewild.
And people have noticed that the air is cleaner. Mm-hmm. So when you can reimagine a city without the traffic, because it is gone, it allows you to have a vision. And again, with cities around the world, you know, Paris, who says we can't return to traffic jams and vehicle pollution. We can't. You know, we've been there, we've done that, and here's this opportunity to close off, you know, restricting vehicles in this area and open it up to people walking and riding bicycles. And I think for Toronto, this is our opportunity. And what was really hopeful for me was seeing Active TO take over lanes on Lakeshore Boulevard. And
what is Active TO?
That's what the City of Toronto has labeled. You know, they've had curb TO, which mm-hmm. was a really minimal little bump outs to allow for people to shop at certain stores. But it was so minimal. Like, it was like, oh, here's a scrap. At least with Active TO, they actually blocked off three lanes on Lakeshore Boulevard. And I think it was a full 6 kilometers worth, which, you know, instead of 600 meters or 60 meters, like on a curb TO, this was an expanse of space where, and it was very interesting because if you've ever been in a bicycle city like Copenhagen or Montreal, people who ride bicycles, you are aware of the sounds, you are aware of where you're going forward. And there's a beautiful ballet that happens. And so on the weekend, as a lot of new people riding bikes for the first time, maybe in a long time, and then the experienced people, whether riding their bicycles or scooters or rollerblading or whatever, everybody navigated the space because they're going at a human pace. Opposed mm-hmm. to going 100 kilometers in a 60-kilometer zone. So, and what also happened, which was interesting, was the three lanes were shared east-west, and people who were walking stayed on Martin Goodman Trail, which, by the way, when people say, why do you need, you know, space on the Lakeshore Boulevard? Well, the trail was built, I don't know, how many decades ago, and it's too narrow for today, let alone tomorrow.
Right.
The size of this city demands wider, you know, whether it be because people have cargo bikes and now with physical distancing having to last as long it is, we need bikeways for people to get to work and to get out and exercise with their families.
So that's a good segue going into the letter that was, I think it was released last week, was it?
Yes.
Speak a little bit about that infrastructure initiative, whether or not it's temporary to the current lockdown conditions or has the potential to be permanent. And if it has the potential to be permanent, what are the risks that the city is going to renege on that? I guess I would say under when political pressure increases from maybe motorists, same old Toronto kind of thing.
Yeah, well, you know, the letter came about because we wanted to make sure that we got the recovery right for everyone. And that means that essential workers in healthcare, grocery stores, and in delivery who have contributed so much. And we believe that adding 100 kilometers of bikeways in a spine, so Etobicoke, Scarborough, across Bloor and Danforth, Yonge Street from Steeles down to Waterfront, means that there is affordable, healthy transportation options like bicycles available. And for people who use a bicycle, because not everybody has a car, like that's, you know, that's, and it's not a right, that's a luxury. We need safe infrastructure. And again, for all ages and abilities. So we wanted to make sure by this letter that this current crisis wasn't replaced by another crisis, that being the climate emergency that Mayor Tory announced in October of 2019. And that is not going away. And certainly if we just do what we did in February and before, then we are going to continue increasing the emissions and the pollution in this city. And that is detrimental to anybody who has,
asthma. Term.
Yeah, the health issues and being vulnerable with the burden of illness, because they are going to be more vulnerable to getting COVID-19 with the air pollution, and that's proven. So, you know, the question about will they renege after doing something like this? I think what happened on the weekend was that, you know, that wrinkle in time that happens, mm-hmm. and people actually were able to see what it's like when the city is open to people walking and scootering and cycling, how good it makes you feel,
right?
And how much space we have available to have that happen. And so the future, once we actually, whether or not we begin with this temporary bikeways, which needs to be installed now, not...
So going to that a little bit, just to detail the temporary bikeways, it's something that city initiated that they're suggesting to put in place immediately in order to create a transportation network for people who don't necessarily want to use the subways, and also because the subways and the buses and the streetcars present a unique health risk just simply because of the social distancing requirements. Is that correct?
Yeah. And so... you know, so many of these people, of course, are having to take, whether it be subway or a bus, and there's still heavily used bus transit ways that could be supplemented with these bikeways so people can have that choice to travel safely. And so the 100 kilometers would be along, like I said, busy Bloor, Danforth, and the Yonge subway lines, as well as on surface routes like Finch, Don Mills, and Victoria Park. Mm-hmm. And so you provide an option. And as well, what's come in recently was, I want to make sure I've got this group name correct, Doctors for Safe Streets. Mm-hmm. They have advocated for University Avenue and Avenue Road to St. Clair for a bike lane, which was actually almost approved years ago, but unfortunately one counselor pressed no and said a yes. But here's doctors and our healthcare providers going to that health corridor, you know, along University. And
I think it was back then, if I recall correctly, I think it was Paula Fletcher who accidentally pressed the wrong button on that one, which killed that initiative. That was under the Miller years. Wow. I can't believe I remember all that, but
that's gold star remembering that.
I'm a bit of a local politics nerd. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
But knowing the politics of the situation, you know, the reuse of the streets, or the reimagining of the streets into these health corridors, into these new transportation networks, even, and putting a temporary stamp on them, I also understand that tying them to the current lockdown situation also puts them at a unique risk going forward in the future. Were these initiatives, these corridors, always planned in the long-term bike network plan that the City of Toronto likes to wave around and do nothing about when anyone criticizes them on their cycling network?
Do you know the numbers on that, Rob? Like this 2016 bike plan, mm-hmm. which was approved and funded. Mm-hmm. It was, and last year that it had a $16 million capital budget for cycling. So of that 2016 bike plan, which was supposed to be finished by June of 2020, next month, how many kilometers did they install of 134 kilometers? Less than a quarter of it. And last year, 2 kilometers were installed.
Lovely.
So going back to the beginning of our conversation, give you a rating for Toronto. Last year, they installed 2 kilometers of bike lanes. And the connectivity and the protectedness of them pales in comparison to cities from around the world.
Yeah, a painted line isn't going to prevent you from getting sideswiped by a delivery truck. And because of that, and I want to be a little bit fair. I mean, for some reason, cycling infrastructure in Toronto has always been a political hot potato at the local council level, whether it became the Jarvis bike lanes or, you know, during the Rob Ford years with his claim of the war on the car. And also having seen it on the ground, I mean, I've seen some of the political energies in the more suburban areas of Toronto, and a lot of them regard putting cycling infrastructure in there as a quote unquote waste of money, only because they have always been reliant on the vehicle as the primary mode of transportation moving around, and anyone else encroaching in that space is not only discouraged, but they don't actually see examples of it, especially during the winter time. If you go into the North Yorks or the North Etobicokes, Scarboroughs, you see some of these roadways. There's no way. I'm a very seasoned cyclist, and I would never even go down these roadways, even if there were painted lanes in these areas. So the political representation for those areas understands that energy and tends to be a bit of a roadblock when it comes to not only cycling infrastructure in their communities, but any money being put towards cycling infrastructure in general. So it's not necessarily the staff's point, but that all comes down to the question of leadership and initiative and what are the priorities. How has the political leadership been when it comes to even this temporary network? Is it just more lip service, or is it something you believe they are going to follow through on and then protect once in place?
Well, you know, they haven't responded to us except saying, Mayor Tory on Metro Morning said advocates will be advocates and they're just doing their job and we already have a plan approved and you know, we're not going to veer from the plan. Well, my response to that is I don't have a job as an advocate. I'm someone who loves the city, who has given hours and hours of volunteer work to all different kinds of organizations in the city for years, and I care about it. And so being an advocate, pulling together over like almost 80 community groups from across all parts of the city within a matter of days, who all want a spine of bikeways for people to have an equitable, healthy way of transporting themselves to their work or for exercise. And it's so, you know, in terms of what was promised, we can't do what was promised yesterday because it hasn't been executed. This is a pandemic. This is an emergency. We are in a climate emergency. And going forward, what has to be done is, you know, as other, you know, Berlin does pop up bike lanes overnight. You know, this is not, again, new. Only to us, we don't seem to be able to create a permanent, beautiful bike lane. You know what I mean? Because there's an aesthetic. We all know, like if something's beautiful, you want to be a part of it. And if we are going to have these utilitarian looking bollards that just get knocked over and left behind, it's like, well, you don't care about me. You don't care about my safety.
And if I call them bowling pins for the snowplows. That's what they are.
Yeah. So you know, the problem, I think part of our problem with our city and Well, there's a divisiveness when you say there's a war in the car. It's like, no, we want to move people forward. This is what a vision is in a city. Is the city is a destination.
Right.
Why do we want to move people in a vehicle, you know, who takes up a huge amount of space and is polluting our environment through the city? Don't mm-hmm. we want to walk and ride a bicycle to the shop? And personally, when I ride my bike around, I get hungry and thirsty. So I love shopping local and supporting right. my community. And so, and you're in a neighborhood opposed to going through the neighborhood. And I think with not having a vision to see our suburbs differently, and to not have a connected transit system, and to not have transit and trains that allow for that last mile, you know, yeah. to be able to have your bicycle on the train, or to be able to have all the bike shares, you know, and things are just connected. We are divisive. We are unconnected to have a full transportation system together. So we are locked into using a car. And then the thing that we haven't been thinking about that other countries are already doing is e-bikes. Like when I was in Berlin, DHL has and is continuing to expand their e-cargo bikes. And so they have a distribution center outside the city, and they use different size of vehicles, whether small trucks or these e-cargo bikes
yeah.
that zip around. They take no space. They're green for the economy. And so, and they've been doing that for years.
And that's kind of a point I'd wanted to touch on, because I've seen these, I mean, I call them last mile vehicles as well, in the sense that they're all kinds of electrified vehicles, whether they be little scooters, like you're seeing the Bird scooters being piloted in Toronto, or they'd be electric vehicle, electric bicycles, or even electric skateboards. I've seen a bunch of those around the city. Yeah. But I've also seen tensions rise, because I remember that the city started allowing them in bike lanes. And essentially, they're motorized vehicles that can go up to 40 kilometers an hour. And I've seen tensions rise between people who are essentially riding what are effectively motorcycles or mopeds with a couple of pedals on either side, so that the provincial they're not in violation of provincial rules on these vehicles, but they're flying at the speed of a car, and some of them weigh up to 1,000 pounds, and they're flying by cyclists who are maybe going 10-15 kilometers an hour, and there is a tension there. So if we're creating cycling infrastructure in order to facilitate industrial use of these kind of, they're still motorized vehicles, just electric, is that not going to just relegate the cycling infrastructure to another kind of tension, instead of between the car and the cyclist versus the cyclist and the motorized last mile vehicle?
Well, and that's what we have to eliminate, is the versus. And therefore you have a vision, and you provide space for those different forms of micro mobility. And so you have to allocate space differently. Mm-hmm. So an oversized Ram truck, why is that downtown Toronto? Like, why is the huge 4x4 downtown Toronto? Like, there's no mud, there's no boulders to go over top. They're too big.
Right.
And so anything like that is allowed, then there's got to be some kind of reason why they were allowed in. Otherwise, we use our space smartly. And that means allocating, whether it be the roads. And so, you know, there's enough green pea parking around. And, you know, there's other countries. It's like you are only allowed to have a vehicle wherever you're living if you can prove you have a parking spot for it. Why are we providing storage for vehicles on our public space?
Right.
That public space to be used, especially now, if we want our restaurant industry to survive. There are different cities in the U.S. right now who are talking about streets, as in streats, and using parking spaces and parking lots to be that exterior outdoor restaurant, so that you can physical distance and that the restaurant can survive.
Right.
And so we have to look at our space differently. And this opportunity of having empty streets, how can we use this? Well, why
do you think the idea, as vehicles become more autonomous and electrified, and essentially, I mean, car companies like, I believe it's Mercedes and Audi, I believe as well, they're basically ramping up fleet services in the sense that they're going to be creating autonomous vehicle fleets to be in an area of a city that essentially mobilize at peak hours of the day to pick up and drop people off on an autonomous level as vehicle autonomy gets more steam, which essentially means that personal vehicle ownership will become less and less attractive, theoretically, which ends up freeing up density on the streets. Whether it be for parked vehicles of people not using them, I believe the stat is 80% of the time most vehicles are never used. And yeah. So all this real estate starts freeing up. Do you see that as maybe a way that streets will begin to be rethought of in terms of their space use, and especially considering a post-COVID future where social distancing is a norm?
Well, have you heard of the 15-minute city?
No. Inform us. Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
you're the expert here, so.
I'm not an expert. I just read a lot.
Okay.
The idea, the concept is that, okay. So for instance, you live downtown, Rob?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So within 15 minutes, can you get to the bank, the grocer, the butcher, the baker, the candlestick maker, like, and work? Can you walk or bike within 15 minutes of where you live?
In terms of like the furthest place I have to go, I would say generally yes.
Okay, so that's the ideal. What we've designed in our outer reaches of the city is not that. One has to drive at least a half an hour sometimes to get to a grocery store, to get to a school, to get to your work. And so the idea of creating these smaller microcosms, these 15-minute cities that are walkable and bikeable and thus healthier for people instead of sitting. So I like the car share idea. It's like the bike share idea. You know, you don't have to invest. You can share these vehicles without having to have the ownership and have a place to park it. And my goodness, the cost savings. So to invest in a bicycle that has a pedal assist, like personally, that's in my future. I live in a valley and I love I can ride my bike easily to get to the places I need to go and or to get to the subway if I need to go downtown. But to get out of my valley in the future, 10 years, I don't know, 15 years for me, I'm going to have to invest in a pedal assist because I want to continue to be car free. I got rid of it last year.
Nice. And, good for you.
Yeah. And it's been great. And, you know, all it means is I have to plan more carefully, but I have a lovely little trailer. And I don't need to buy, you know, 20 cases of toilet paper. You know, you buy what you need. And I think that's a rethinking that needs to go along with our future as well.
So do you believe, so from what you described earlier, the idea of, you know, this new cycling infrastructure, even just on a temporary level, has been met with not much political support and even political dismissiveness, as you've mentioned, the Mayor Tory's comments on the morning show. Are there any political leaders kind of emerging or on the forefront of this issue that are pushing for it and perhaps against a tone-deaf council to take the initiative now? I mean, the city can accelerate construction and due to the lack of traffic and, you know, sectioned off pieces of Lakeshore in order to facilitate pedestrian use. Why couldn't they do something like this? Is there anyone kind of picking up the torch on a political level on this issue?
You know, I think one could say traditionally our downtown councillors have, because they are representing thousands and thousands of people who in the past, and probably many of them are still, not only living vertically, but working vertically. And that downtown space, which is so crowded with narrow sidewalks, with speeding cars, with very little green space, those are our advocates for, you know, seeing firsthand that we need to move people around our city in not only a greener way, but a safer way. And that's with a connected, because there's no point in installing bike lanes that are not connected. And so the 100 kilometers that we're saying has to be in now is from, you know, Steeles along Yonge down to Waterfront. You've got a wonderful, you know, interior of the city mode for people to get to work. And then across, you know, bridging our city east to west, Bloor and Danforth, where so many people, you know, thousands of people already use. So, but it's got to be connected. And then further, like I said, with the transit corridors that will allow with a bikeway another option for them to get to work if they want to ride their bicycle and be safe, because we need the protected, you know, infrastructure. We can't have more paint on the ground and saying this is a bike lane. It doesn't cut it. You know, we have lost too many people of all ages in our city, and we can't go back. We have to go forward. We have an opportunity to reimagine the city and have a cleaner and greener future and a healthier one, right?
Yeah, of course. So Janet, how can one tuned in or listening lend their support to this initiative and maybe perhaps pressure their local councillor and the mayor to provide some support to it? How can one get in touch?
Thank you. So there's a couple of different ways. You know, we've just come together, like, you know, so it's not like there's a website or anything like that, but there is a petition that if somebody was on Twitter, if you go to, or if you look up Bike TO, you will most likely find a petition that we've already secured over 2,500 signatures within a couple of days.
Excellent. That
it's been, yeah, that's been, it's been great because, you know, when Mayor Tory said advocates will be advocates, it's like, you know, we are all people who live in this city. And so the people who have signed on to the letter, which has continued to grow, I think we're close to 80 now, are residents associations, healthcare organizations, environmental groups, ratepayers associations, people who live in the communities and see firsthand the way they want their city to be. And so the petition is something that can be signed, and absolutely to write to the mayor and to write to their local councillor saying, this is a pandemic. We are in the climate emergency. We must have 100 kilometers of bikeways established within our city now so that everybody has a healthy, safe way to get to their place of work and to use for transportation.
Excellent. So for anyone listening or watching, I will link to the petition and whatever contact information I have in the description below and in the show notes. And so anyone who's watching this can easily and conveniently find that and get your voice heard. Write a letter to your counselor. Make sure the mayor hears your voice, whether it be on social media or you're writing him a letter specifically to this. I happen to understand how the mayor is probably going to continue to be dismissive on this issue, but the opportunity is now to reimagine our city, to reimagine what it's going to be in the future, in a year from now, 2 years from now, and we'll see this if we don't act in the right way as a missed opportunity to redesign our civic future and our city's future. Janet, I really appreciate you coming onto the program and sharing your thoughts with us on this. I will not hesitate to bring you back on should the subject arise again. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you for the opportunity, Rob.
Okay. Everyone, thank you for tuning in, and we've been going great so far. Our episodes coming up in the future are going to be really exciting, so make sure you stay tuned and make sure you tell all your friends about Lockdown Toronto. Subscribe to the audiocast. Remember, there's an audiocast version of this. That's worth checking out. You can find out whatever podcatcher you use. Thank you for tuning in. We'll see you in the next one.